And welcome back to the Generations Broadcast, friends. Kevin Swanson here with you today. Today we're going to talk about a very important subject, and that is autism. We've brought this subject up a number of times in the past. One of the reasons for that is because autism is on the rise in the Western world. Many explanations for that, of course, but the important thing is, how do we work with the autistic child? How do we love this autistic child and nurture and disciple? And how do we raise them in a good, solid home with the right kinds of therapy? And these are the bigger issues. These are the issues that touch the lives of families all over America and all over the world. As it turns out, it also touches the lives of parents in the Ukraine. I know it's hard for people to understand sometimes that there are other nations beyond our own country in which serious problems are being dealt with and not being dealt with as well as we can deal with them here in the United States. And joining me today are a couple of folks who have been working on a project for quite a long time, a project on the autistic issue in the Ukraine, and they have put together a film called Not Forgotten. Matt Blick and Tom Saxon join us on the Generations broadcast. Now, Tom, the co-producer, and Matt Blick, the director and co-producer of Not Forgotten. Welcome, gentlemen, to the Generations broadcast.
Thank you so much for having us.
Let's start with Tom, first of all. Tom, I know you've got some background in Ukraine. You were a missionary there, and you saw this to be a significant issue years and years ago. How did you begin to note it? Give us some history, first of all, on your background in working with the autistic folks in the Ukraine.
So I've been working with children with autism through special needs ministries in churches for about 25 years, off and on. And then, so I have a real special place in my heart for children with autism. And then 5 years ago, I was bringing a team of people in to work at an orphanage to do a VBS. And during the week, we discovered in a small room in the back of the school that there were 10 nonverbal children with autism and two untrained workers. And we decided the next year that I would bring autism specialists back to work with the teachers in this orphanage. The next year, we brought autism specialists and parents of children with autism to work with the parents that were in Ukraine with these children. So we worked in this orphanage for 3 years. And then it dawned on me, well, if we have these children and there are just 10 of them here, where are the others? Because not every orphanage will allow disabled children. So we started investigating and found out through other Christian ministries in Ukraine that there really are there's no help for a disabled child, and especially one with autism. And so it's deplorable, and it really tugged at my heart. And so we started investigating. And we've been able to talk to very important people in the capital of Kiev about education and with doctors, with parliament members, and we're able to find out that they just don't have a place for these children anywhere in their society.
Tom, what do you think the incidence of this is in Ukraine?
Well, we think it is, as far as we can tell, that this is a global issue. So if our statistics in the West, that would include Europe, are 1 in 88. We have no reason to believe that it's not 1 in 88 in every country.
Yeah, and it has been on the rise. Do you think it's been on the rise in Ukraine as well?
We think so. The experts that I talk to, I am not trained in autism. I consider myself an advocate for children and parents of autism. But I do have a lot of friends who are specialists in autism and work in this field. And they think that it probably is just the same in Ukraine.
Okay. What kind of progress have you made in the work that you have been doing in educating and getting folks equipped to handle the problem of autism?
Well, the two purposes of the documentary is, one, to raise the awareness that autism is a global problem. It's just not a United States problem. And the second is that we're working on getting a free flow of information from the West, which is very rich in our research and in our help and in guiding parents and informing doctors. Our culture here in the United States is very wealthy and can afford to have a lot of things done for a child with autism, and a lot of research has been done. There's none of that information that has crossed over into Ukraine or any Russian-speaking nation. Our job is to translate very important things for doctors to be able to diagnose correctly and to advise parents. And then we're trying to help the parents also know what to do with their child when they get this diagnosis. Right now, we have translated a book that is from a California Autism Center. The center is called HANDS, and it simply tells a doctor, these are the things you need to look for in diagnosing a child with autism. It's 20 pages long. It's been translated into Russian. We're just waiting for the finances to get it published. And when we do, we've been promised by a prominent parliament member of the government that he will make sure that every doctor in Ukraine gets this document. Mm. And this will be monumental. It'll be a small speck on the elephant, but it'll be a beginning of where they get the correct information to say, yes, this child has autism.
One of my most popular programs ever aired on this broadcast, I aired about 7 or 8 years ago with a lady who had a child with severe autism, and she had homeschooled him over many, many years. She had written a book called Too Wise to Be Mistaken, Too Good to Be Unkind, and it was a very, very solid book from a Christian perspective on handling the autistic child. And I tell you, there are a lot of parents out there. Like I say, these programs are very popular. A lot of parents are dealing with children, not just with autism, but anywhere on the Asperger's scale. And maybe you ought to explain a little bit to the audience what's involved in autism, what it is, and how it's related to the Asperger scale.
Well, right now, they call all autism the autism spectrum.
Okay.
That can be Asperger's, which is a very high-functioning child, verbal, can go to school, seems to be socially awkward, but very teachable in most cases, all the way down to the nonverbal and has hypertension and also sometimes is violent. That's sort of the lower end where there's a lot of hope for that child if there's early intervention.
Yes.
But if there is an early intervention, then this child does not live up to its full potential. And that's what we want for the children with autism, for them to make the progress to be used to their full potential.
Mm. Matt, let's talk to you just for a second. I know you took on this project as the director of this documentary, Not Forgotten. Matt, why'd you pick up on this project and tell us a little bit about how it went when you did your filming out in the Ukraine?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, so I came on this project after knowing Tom for a couple of years, a good friend of mine, and I've been working on my own projects with my own business, and Tom came to me one time and he said, hey, he's like, there's this awesome story in Ukraine. It's a heartbreaking story, but he's like, I want to tell the world about it, and I want you to shoot it. I said, great, let's do it. And so, you know, with a lot of planning, a lot of pre-production, we got to the point of going over and filming this, and it's just been one wild ride, you know, over the last 2 years, and it's just, it's amazing to be able to be a part of this. I'm so thankful to Tom for the opportunity just to kind of see how God has kind of guided this whole project along the last years. It's been amazing. And just, you know, with my experience with it, I came into it not having a lot of experience with autism, not knowing too much. But as time got along, as you know, we were asking questions, we were, you know, doing research and everything involved to make it happen, I just, you know, became to have more of a heart for these children and really kind of saw – kind of, you know, my calling in this moment to serve others, to use my gifts, you know, as God wants us to. A good way to explain, you know, kind of this was the, you know, Matthew 25:45, where it explains, and I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, you do it to the least of these, my brother, and you do it to me. And so I just saw it as a way to, you know, this is where God has me right now. This is what he wants me to use the gifts and talents he's given me to serve others. And it's not about me. It's not about what Tom and I can do. It's not about the change we can make, but it's about serving Christ through it.
When you were on site in Ukraine, were you shocked by anything that you saw?
Oh, yeah, I was, this is my second trip to Ukraine, so there was a lot of things that really, you know, a culture shock in a way. But really, you know, kind of two things that kind of really hit me hard were being into family homes, which, you know, never happens, especially with a film crew. It was kind of amazing to see God open doors that way. But just being in there talking with parents and just seeing their hopelessness and seeing how they really didn't know what to do with their child. And what really broke my heart and pumped the same thing, but, you know, seeing single mothers, fathers would leave the home after they found out their child was autistic. And it's just because it's a shame-based culture over there. And so my heart really goes out to seeing books get translated for parents, because even just with a little bit of help, a little bit of knowledge, knowing what to do with my child, how do I give them a normal routine throughout the day, I see as a way that it will help give hope to both parents. And you know, my prayer is that many of the fathers won't leave.
Matt, you know, I think one of the things that a lot of people in the West think is, well, if we could just get these kids out of these countries, if we could adopt them, maybe we could take care of, you know, these problems. But really, I think ultimately what we want is to disciple the nations, to equip folks to be able to deal with some of these issues themselves, so that you can have functional families, fathers and mothers coming alongside and doing the work themselves. I mean, I guess that's for Matt or Tom. It seems to me that equipping the indigenous folks to do the work is really a priority, even above, you know, getting some of these kids out of the country.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Coming alongside these families is really what we want to do, and helping them raise their children. This is a long-term project. If we can change just a little bit of the condition and the societal norms where there is no place for a child that has a disability. In fact, many of these children with disabilities are discarded into institutions.
Well, what does that mean? Does that mean they live in institutions the rest of their lives?
That's what that means.
Huh.
In fact, one child, I will tell you in the documentary, 5 weeks ago, I went back to Ukraine and saw all the families that are in the documentary, and told them thank you and said the premiere is coming up and we're very happy that you're in it. And one mother had given her child up to the institution since we had been there 2 years ago. He's 14 now, nonverbal, he's very violent, he weighed almost 300 pounds, and she could not do it anymore, and she gave him up to the institution. So I asked her, what is that like? Where is that, and what are they doing for him? She said, well, he's in a room every day with 35 other children like him and one untrained worker. Hmm. That is that boy's life.
Yeah, and that's not going to do any good for him. He's never going to improve.
Oh, no, I mean, she discarded him, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
And it's common that parents will do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because she needed to work. You know, she had no help. Mm-hmm. Her husband had left.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody had left. She couldn't go out with him. I mean, it's just really, it's really a mess in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
And only the gospel is going to change that over the
Amen. Amen. And we have to believe, we have to be positive and optimistic that the gospel is able to do that. But we Westerners who have the gospel and have learned some of these methods by which we can disciple and train and teach even the special needs kids, this can provide a viable solution. We really need to come alongside them. I think, you know, maybe what you're saying is we need more resources, more people, and more money to get out there and come alongside these people and disciple the nations as Jesus has instructed us to do. Is that kind of the thrust of the vision?
That is absolutely dead on. That is absolutely the vision, is to use our resources to come alongside these parents, and along with that will be the gospel.
And it could be that families who have already gone through this can be some of the most useful families. In fact, I'm finding that some of these families who have raised kids with special needs are some of the most giving, some of the most sharing, some of the most willing people to come alongside other parents and do this kind of work. In fact, we're going to interview somebody in just a few minutes on this program who is doing just that. They have worked with special needs kids and they're just open and willing to help others. And I think we just need to continue to encourage families in America who have things really, really well. They've really been blessed with a lot of different resources and blessings to share those blessings with others.
Yes. And so if your audience will go to notforgottenthemovie.com.
Okay, that's notforgottenthemovie.com, friends. Anything else you'd like to say, Tom, about just generally reaching out to the children with these special needs, especially those who have some pretty severe situations like the autistic child?
Well, I would say that in America, we forget that we are the most blessed nation as far as services, as far as availability of information, and any child in America can find a place in a school with special needs. Most states have laws where they will accept special needs children and mainstream them. No child that has a handicap can go to school in Ukraine. That's how bad it is.
Wow.
We have to realize that we need to spread the wealth, the goodness, the knowledge, the compassion into these other nations.
Hmm.
And I'll tell you, if Ukraine is this way, and Ukraine is still considered a third world country.
Mm-hmm.
But just think about what is happening beyond there in Kazakhstan and Pakistan and all of those places where we haven't been able to go yet. And there are children with autism there, and there are children with disabilities.
Well, if missions can't reach out to the least of these, as Matt said, if missions can't get into some of these areas and bring the gospel to families who are dealing with some of the most severe cases of special needs, the gospel is not being shared. So I think this is definitely a message, not just to those of us here in the West, but also those who are going out to the mission field, that we just have to reach out to these. This is exactly what Jesus did when he was here. Of course, at that time, he was dealing with demon possession and leprosy and all those sorts of things. But he always went to the most needy, and we need to do the same thing. And it's a very, very powerful message today on Generations. Tom, Matt, thank you so much for sharing the vision.
Thank you, Mr. Kevin.
And we'll be back in just a moment.
Does what a nation believe about God really matter? What happens when a nation forgets God? Is there still hope for the Western society? What can we do? Where do we go from here? To find out, hear Drs. Erwin Lutzer and Marshall Foster at the Rocky Mountain Super Conference on the Family, sponsored by Christian Home Educators of Colorado, coming June 13 to 15 at the Denver Mart. To find out more, go to check.org. That's CHEC.org.
Welcome, friends, to the Generations Radio Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host, with you. I'm a homeschool father of five. We're raising our children out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado and have been homeschooling since, I think, the early 1990s, and homeschooled myself back in the 1960s and 1970s. And we have a very special interview today with a homeschool mom who's been at this since 1984. That's 29 years, and she's raised seven children. Kristen Nebet and her husband Rich have been out here in Colorado since, 85. Okay, and started out in California, but now homeschooling out here in Colorado for a very, very long time. And they have a very important story to tell. And Kristen's going to talk a little bit about her experiences homeschooling her children, some of which have been dyslexic. From mildly to profoundly dyslexic, one of her adult sons is still functionally illiterate. She is currently seeking to support, encourage, and educate homeschooling parents concerning learning disabled students. And Kristen, first and foremost, as I say that, you know, I know your sons. I look at them. I don't think disability, that's not the first thing that comes to my mind. I think genius. I think blessing, that God has blessed them in some amazing ways. But the minute you say learning disabled, you're thinking, oh boy. We got a big problem here. Isn't that the first thing that comes to people's minds? You know, think about the homeschooling mom. She's got a 7-year-old. She gets the label for that 7-year-old son, and her heart just sinks, and she thinks, oh, this is going to be horrible. Isn't that the impression that a lot of people get?
Absolutely.
Yeah. As in, this is not going to be a pleasant experience educating these
Absolutely.
Young folks.
Absolutely. But this mom already knew that before she got the label.
Right. Right. Well, you had some issues yourself, and Rich, your husband, had some issues with reading, dyslexia, and it manifested itself in your children, and sometimes in a profound way.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, Kristen, if you could maybe talk a little bit about the individual difficulties that your sons experienced in their education, starting with your older sons and working down.
Luke didn't read until he was 7. Which I at that time thought was really late. That's not late.
It's not unusual, no.
No, it's not late. But my first read at 4.
Okay, okay.
And I didn't realize that he was somewhat precocious, so I just compared and I looked at the second. And then when you talk to everybody else, and one of the things homeschooling moms do that's really not good for us is we compare a lot.
I know.
We shouldn't compare.
No. Principal individuality is essential. Essential. That's... I think my second chapter in my book, Upgrade, and, you know, I get really passionate when I get on the stage and start talking about the principle of individuality. It's my favorite principle, I think, of all of them, because every child is so unique, blessed by God with unique gifts, talents, and abilities, and I just pray that parents would recognize these things. And somehow we have this idea that reading or math is it. That's it. That's like 99.99% of a person's giftings is going to be in the area of reading and math. But that's such a narrow slice of all the gifts.
But what are we tested? What are our kids tested on?
That's it.
It's reading and math.
Reading and math. That's it. That's the test.
When I started homeschooling, they didn't use the Iowa test or achievement. I think it's the CAT test. They only tested them on reading and math.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's just such a narrow, narrow element of, I mean, okay, if you're going to be an engineer, you have to know algebra. Now, reading is important. It is true. Reading is important. But it's not the end-all and be-all of everything we do all day long, if you think about it. Take the average person out there. I'm not, of course, I read a lot because I do a radio program. But my guess is the average plumber, the average electrician, the average contractor, the average, not reading for large portions of the day. He's doing other things. Musicians. They don't read that much. They look at notes, but they're not reading. So you think about all of the people in the world and what they do. I'd say reading might make up about 25% of life. It's not 99.99%.
You'd have to talk to Isaac about that, my non-reader.
Yeah.
He would tell you how he sees the world and how he's learning to function in it.
Right.
And
he's your most dyslexic of all of them.
He is.
You call him profoundly dyslexic.
Yes. He's functionally illiterate.
Uh-huh. Meaning that when he reads, let's say he reads God is love. How did he read that in 1 John?
He recognizes the word God. In fact, an awful lot of the Bible he will recognize because we read it so much. And there's
right.
a lot of repetition.
Okay.
But normally when he reads a word, comes across a word like cat, uh-huh. he'll still sound it out.
No, cat.
That's correct.
Or he would say, God is love. That's how
he would. He would still sound out an awful lot of it. Uh-huh. And the problem with that, some of the shorter words he's finally turned into sight words, but the problem with that is by the time he reads the entire sentence, he's lost the context. And it is so time-consuming and mm-hmm. so hard on him mm-hmm. that he just tells people to their face, I can't read.
And it's not as if you haven't been teaching him. I mean, you threw yourself into this. You were a very conscientious homeschooling mom. You're the most conscientious of homeschooling mom. I know what you've done with your children over the years. You put all kinds of time into this.
I had a program that insisted that I spend 4 hours a day one-on-one.
Huh.
And I had 2 sons dyslexic at that time.
Wow.
I didn't manage it, of course.
Uh-huh.
But I did for periods of time manage this, yes.
Uh-huh. Okay, now, looking back at how you did all of this, your thoughts, what would you tell yourself, looking back? What would you tell yourself? What's the first thing you would say?
to really remember that these kids are created by God,
mm-hmm.
that they are, that God made them this way,
mm-hmm.
and to accept that a little better. And I would really change the way I taught mm-hmm. my children.
Yes.
Dyslexic kids don't learn quite the same as, I don't want to say normal, but quote, the average child. Dyslexic kids learn in, they have kind of a sporadic retrieval system.
Okay.
And so what they know Monday, they may not know Tuesday.
Okay.
What they know Tuesday, they may not have known Monday.
Uh-huh.
And I wouldn't keep repeating everything. What I did when I got up and tried to, when I sat down and tried to teach my children how to read, Isaac especially, if he forgot something, well, often I cried first,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then just upset him more. Mm-hmm. But on my good days,
okay.
I would look at it and say, okay, well, then I just need to back up and reteach this.
Uh-huh.
That was very frustrating to me. It was very frustrating to Isaac.
Right.
And Paul.
I can see that.
He mm-hmm. got so sick
sure.
of reading.
Sure.
He didn't really need that.
Yeah.
He needed me to say, okay, no problem, Isaac. This is an off day for reading. Let's go on to math.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, if math were having problems, and in all honesty, Isaac also has problems with math. He doesn't. He's not just dyslexic. He has dyscalculia, which is the same thing with math. If we were having a rough day in math, you say, fine, let's go on to history.
Huh.
Make memory retrieval no big deal. And
right.
I think that
right.
not being put on the spot, he would have remembered a lot more, a lot quicker. It wouldn't have been a real tense experience for him trying to retrieve this information that he couldn't retrieve. And, you know, third thing, if he had the third subject, couldn't manage that too, I recommend to parents now, go take a nature hike.
Yeah.
Go observe ants.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Put on a, if sure. it's too cold, put on a history sure. video
you're
or
still,
something.
You're still learning something. And it sounds to me like it's going to be less sequential. Just a little less sequential.
Absolutely.
And most people think that we have to learn sequentially. But we don't have to, because, you know, this whole unity of the world God has created can be learned in different ways. And we come in at various aspects of this. And all you're saying is instead of just kind of working through this sequentially from one side and working in, just pick a couple of different spots and let's study God's world at different points. And in the end, they are learning something. They are learning something.
The hard part with this, Kevin, comes about when you have multiple children.
Uh-huh.
How do you fit them all into this bouncing all over?
Right.
But I still think I would try because, mm-hmm. In all honesty, if you're teaching someone, trying to put give them 4 hours a day one-on-one,
yes.
you're already ignoring the other children.
Right, right.
So I think that this might incorporate them actually a little bit better.
Mm-hmm. What about reading out loud? Just reading out loud. Well, how does that play in? Now, some of them are more audio than others. Some of them listen better than others.
Okay. You mean having them listen
yes.
to something?
Yes, right. Right.
He listened to the entire Henty series. He does fine with that.
Okay.
He has no problems right. at all processing when something's read to him.
Okay, okay. So I would think that would play a pretty important part in the life of a young man who's got problems with dyslexia.
It does.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And now, where is Isaac today? Isaac is your 17-year-old.
Yes.
Okay. He's 17 years old, and Paul is 20.
Yes.
So these were your two young men who had the most significant issue with dyslexia. Where are
Correct.
They today? What are they doing today?
They are actually both Paul is studying at Pikes Peak Community College.
Okay.
And learning video production and some radio television skills.
Mm-hmm.
He's also very, very artistic.
Okay.
However, to do something in art mostly requires a four-year degree. Unless you're just doing art on the side.
Right.
And he's not probably going to end up with a four-year degree.
Mm-hmm.
School is tough for him.
Mm-hmm.
And in all honesty, if we don't create a love for learning in our children, which most of parents of dyslexic children don't, they get frustrated, we get frustrated, they don't have that love of learning.
Yes, right.
But he is very artistic, and he is, like I said, studying the radio television
okay.
production.
Okay.
He is doing that with his sister,
okay.
which I mentioned to you earlier.
Right.
Karen dedicated herself to helping her brothers through college.
Mm,
and
beautiful.
If you look at her portfolio, mm-hmm. she is jumping all over the place in what she's studying
mm-hmm.
because what her brothers are interested in is what she takes.
Okay.
And then she personally reads every single textbook to them.
Out loud.
Out loud.
Amazing.
You can get an audio copy from the college, but mm-hmm. it's a computer voice.
Mm-hmm.
And Isaac found it very hard to understand because they don't have the proper inflection. They don't stop at periods correctly.
Right.
So Karen just said, forget it. I'll read it. Mm-hmm. And that's what she's been doing.
That's beautiful.
And mm-hmm. Isaac is a certified welder
okay.
already.
So did you start him early on doing other things?
He was a certified welder at 15.
Oh, that's great.
We did that because Isaac is very hands-on. He uh-huh. learns watching somebody else.
Yes.
He would like to go through the welding course possibly at Pikes Peak, but he'd really rather find a good welder out there.
Right, and maybe do a mentorship.
And just do that.
Yeah.
There is one in town that was recommended, but I know that the guy said, but don't leave them there past noon because they start drinking at noon.
Okay.
That's
rough environment. Probably not a good idea with the welding torches laying around.
So we didn't go that way.
Okay.
But he's very hands-on. He's working for a landscaper this summer, and he is doing some college classes now, too, along with his sister and his brother.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So you've been through a number of years. How are the boys doing in terms of their, I don't know, comfort level with the gifts that God has given them? Are they at the point where they realize, okay, I'm not going to read or I'm not going to read very well, but I can live with this?
Paul is struggling more than Isaac.
Okay.
I think because he's older and realizing that he's got to find a way to make a living.
Yes.
But I'm not sure. Isaac... It may not be that. It may be a different reason. Isaac has accepted it very well.
Okay.
Isaac has no problems
mm-hmm.
telling people, I cannot read. And these kids have a rough life.
Mm-hmm.
Both of my boys, especially Isaac, has been called retarded,
wow.
has been called illiterate.
Wow.
And I have to tell you, this is by church people.
Right, right.
Church kids. Kids uh-huh. are rough on kids.
Right, they are. They are.
Well, one of the things that helped is, you know, Rich lost his computer job recently.
Right, right.
And Rich looked at the boys one Wednesday when our trash was picked up, and he said, I want you guys to look out there and see something. He says, the trash man's still employed.
Yeah.
And it gave my kids some perspective
uh-huh.
that that hard work, blue-collar work, that's fine.
Sure it is.
And
sure
so
it
is. So Isaac is a hard worker.
Have we over-glorified the academics? To me, that's obvious. It seems like that's what everything's all about. It's about the academics.
I don't think it's the academics, Kevin. I think it's the love of money.
Okay, that drives that.
That drives
right.
that.
Right, okay, gotcha.
If the trash man were paid as much as a doctor,
right.
I think we'd have a lot more people being trashmen.
Yeah, but I'm guessing you got entrepreneurs out there that don't know how to read. And they're pulling in $27 million a year.
I read of a CEO of a fairly large company. I can't tell you what company. I think I know what company it was,
okay.
but I'm not positive.
Mm-hmm.
He could not read at all. He had a very faithful secretary that when he was promoted, he took her with him. And she read everything to him and wrote everything for him.
Well, see, now that's the other thing. You know, eventually your young men are going to get married. And you get married, you marry a wife, you develop the family economy together, she happens to be the reader, you're not the reader. I mean, so what? So, you know, the axe head is on the axe handle. I think that, you know, a young man could do very, very well in life if he marries a woman who can read.
I haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah.
You know, I'll let you know in 10
okay.
years.
Okay, that sounds good.
One of the things I would say right now is that I do think it's very important with these kids to teach them good communication skills. Dyslexic kids or learning disabled just means that they're having a hard time. Not all dyslexics are learning disabled. You can be mildly dyslexic and struggle with school. Learning disabled means that you really are struggling learning by conventional methods.
Okay.
Isaac is truly learning disabled. Paul is too.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that one of the things we ignore is we need to teach them really good communication skills.
Mm-hmm.
Because these kids are ridiculed because they can't read, they pull back. They get worse mm-hmm. communication skills, not better. They have to, every paper they write in college, if they go to college, or even in the work field, they have to do all that organization in their head.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have to be able to speak all that correctly into a program such as Dragon Naturally Speaking, which is an audio mm-hmm. files program,
right?
In order to write any kind of paper.
Mm-hmm.
And in a lot of jobs, they would have to do the same thing. Mm-hmm. They need to be able to communicate with people. And that's not something we teach them because we're so busy teaching reading still.
So much of life is communication. I mean, verbal communication, just speaking back and forth, listening, responding. I would say if we said 25% of life is reading, we would have to say that at least 60% of life is verbal communication. This is how we manage people in the workplace. This is how we get things done. This is how we subcontract. We do some of it through writing. And you can drag and speak, I'm sure, some of it if you're dyslexic. But a huge amount of it is picking up that telephone. A huge amount of it is pulling people together in a room and talking through things. And, of course, a huge amount of the work that's getting done in a family involves that communication back and forth. So what you're saying is, man, we need to be careful that we're just not banging our head against a concrete wall while we're trying to educate a dyslexic child. Let's do the things that make sense. Let's put our time into something that's worthwhile and not create frustration with mom and child.
Reading is valued so highly mm-hmm. that we figure everything's going to fall into place as soon as they can read.
Mm-hmm.
So we keep teaching reading. I did this with Paul almost all the way through high school.
Mm-hmm.
You start ignoring everything else. And you can't do that. They've got to learn life skills. There has to be a point where you stop listening to other people who keep saying, it's going to click, it's going to click, it's going to click. It does not click with all of these children.
You know, reading is basic to the whole educational program that we have today. And we encourage our children to read, and that's a good thing, but it's not the essence of it. And, you know, there's nowhere in the Bible it commands you to read. The Bible recommends and commands us to raise our children in the nurture of the Lord, to read the Word and to them and to instruct them in the Word. The other thing that we have today that we didn't have even 100 years ago or 150 years ago is audio. You know, if you want to hear the Word of God, if you want to hear the Bible and you don't happen to be the best reader in the world, why don't you just, you know, grab a little audio, hit the button and listen to that. And with the computer, you can get on your little iPhone anywhere today. My wife is constantly listening to the Bible or some sermon on sermon audio, and she does it with her iPhone. So we have so many more conveniences today. You would think that dyslexia would be even less of a problem than it was 100 years ago. And yet it's not, I guess, because of
the way
we do academics.
I would say it's more of a problem than it was 100 years ago.
Why is that?
100 years ago, I think they could still go out and, well, you've got to go back a little farther for a blacksmith.
Mm-hmm.
But there were still professions out there that kids could apprentice in at 14,
right.
15 that did
right.
not require reading.
And
Isaac
right.
can't even fill out the application.
Right.
He still
right.
is coming against a lot of hurdles.
Right.
Because he cannot read.
Because socially, it is so unacceptable.
Socially, you're also considered lazy, unmotivated,
mm-hmm. right.
an idiot.
Right. Right. Meaning they're not really plumbing this person. They're not really testing the character. They're not interested in testing the character. They just take the little resume they get from, or the little certificate you get when you graduate. And if you find out this kid can't read, is this guy going to be of any value to society? It's a question that comes to them. Years ago, as you said, people really didn't need to know how to read to be the blacksmith, to be the farmer, to be all these other things. Granted, literacy was high, and we still encourage a high literacy rate with our kids that can read. That's a good thing.
Interesting little side note here, though, is that the prison system in San Diego County was
mm-hmm.
tested.
Yeah.
Over 70% roughly of those inmates are illiterate.
Right, right, right.
So that's how easy right. it is to make it on your own without reading.
Right, right.
Or easy it isn't.
Right, right. But our systems are imposing this idea that you have to read. But, you know, with a child who's got the individual gifts, talents, and abilities that God has given to them, I think we as parents, we as employers, we as church leaders need to take that into consideration and say, you know what, these children have wonderful gifts. Let's find a use for them. Let's appreciate the gifts. Let's encourage the gifts. Let's affirm the gifts. And this isn't done enough. I don't think it's done enough in our families. It's not done enough in our society, The principle of individuality just is not respected as it ought to be respected. Think about the child with Down syndrome. I mean, that's an obvious one. Almost every church, my guess, has some child with Down syndrome. And you know, Kristen, that these children, most of them are not going to be academically trained to read and to do math and all the rest, like the rest of the kids in the church. But is it possible that this child can be appreciated and loved and encouraged for what God has given to them? And I think the answer is, yeah, of course. Isn't that what the church ought to be?
Absolutely. But a Down syndrome child is just far enough over the edge that we don't expect the same out of them.
I see.
Whereas
right,
my boys
right.
are, if you meet them,
right.
you're going to look at them and think, they're normal.
Mm-hmm.
They're, you know,
so they ought to be able to read.
So they ought to be able to. They are not looked upon as the same anywhere, mm-hmm. anywhere near the same as a Down syndrome.
Right, right. Kristen, how about all these programs that are trying to, quote unquote, fix the child? And there's so much methodology out there, experts that are coming in, and you can spend money on this. What do you think about these programs?
Moms and dads are being inundated with all of these programs, and everyone claims that they can fix every single problem that your kid has. You know, I have found that every single one that I've talked, either I have experience with or other people have experience with, they've all helped somewhat. But a true LD kid, if you look at neurological studies, they're LD. I mean, they have learning disabilities. They have them for life. And can they help your children? Yes, they can help. Can they cure your children? Probably sometimes. But the problem is that if I had tried everything that was put in front of me, I would have spent probably $200,000. Would my child be reading right now? I don't know. And I think we need to proceed with caution and to really pray about things. And if we can't afford it, give it to God.
Well, this has been a great, great interview. And as we encourage those young moms out there, Kristen, let's just talk to them. What do they do? How do they encourage their young sons? I'll be honest with you, Kristen, I think we're getting back to, well, you know, if your son is 8 or 9 or 10 years of age, why not just incorporate them into the family economy? Why not get them working, you know, changing the tires, plowing the fields, doing the welding? I mean, that's obviously what your younger son, Isaac, found early on at 15 years of age. And, you know, once he realized that life was more than hunkering down with a book, but life was welding, life was farming, life was plumbing, life was contracting the building of houses, and you have to be able to read blueprints, but it's not as if you have to read Calvin's Institutes to build a house, you know. Once he realizes that the world is largely this work, this dominion thing, it seems to me that's a huge release. That's like, oh, I can do that.
I think it would be, but I think you have a more optimistic outlook on this than we're facing right now.
Yeah, well, the whole economy, the whole economy isn't exactly endorsing our whole family economics, pull the young 10-year-old boys into the process, a worldview. But you know what? Person, I'm willing to climb this 14er. You know, I think in the next generation, we need to do this better. Think about it, Chris. I mean, the first generation of homeschooling, we kind of got some things down, but now you're here saying, wow, we've learned some things. We learned some things with Paul and with Isaac. And I think we could open up a world to these young men who have the quote-unquote learning disabilities, and we can maximize on their talents early on.
I hope so.
That's exciting.
It is. It is. I would love to encourage other moms who are dealing with some of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd love to tell them, you know, if your kid can't read at 7, that's not a big deal. It's when they can't read at 9 or 10.
Yeah. Everybody starts to freak out now. If they can't read at 12, it's like, oh, no, this is going to be a total train wreck. But as it turns out, no, not necessarily. The beginning of wisdom is the fear of God. Here's the whole idea, fear God, keep his commandments. And God is raising up these young men to be providers for the home, and that doesn't always involve reading. Okay, so he's not going to be a seminary professor. Okay, so he's not going to be hunkering down and reading Calvin's Institutes. We can live with that. Well, he's going to have to listen to it on audio. All right, that's fine too. So, yeah, I think what we're learning is that it's really not that big of a deal. We do the work. We try to tweak to the child's abilities and we tweak the learning methodology as best as we can and do what we can to convey the information. Is there anything else you might have done differently with Paul or Isaac as you look back?
Other than changing subjects, other than realizing that memory retrieval is poor with these children often, probably not.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not. One of the biggest difficulties of dyslexia that I will mention is that words don't orient themselves on the page correctly. That's a real tough one. That's a real tough one to diagnose. I had no idea that Paul's words were squishing together into one little group in the center of the page. The rest of the page was white.
Okay. And how do you correct for that? Is there any correction at all for that kind of thing?
Blue Mylar worked over his page. When mm-hmm. they used Blue Mylar over the reading itself, and it kept it from moving.
Mm-hmm.
Part of this is trial and error.
Yeah.
I think you just need to be open. You need to tell yourself that, you know, God called you to this mm-hmm. and that he will equip you for it and be open to his leading, mm-hmm. not everybody else's, his leading.
Right.
And to try really hard not to fret about the state because that's a hard one.
Meaning, and
all the requirements.
All the government requirements.
Yes.
You know, Kristen, I have this line I use in conferences all the time. I say, if your son has a hard time reading at 6 or 7 years of age, you don't need to have him bolted to a desk for 5 hours every single day from the time he's 6 years of age. Just let him, you know, work with dad out in the fields or find some job for him to do in the home. And you know, let mom read to him for an hour or two in the evenings and turn off the TV, whatever you do, don't let him watch television. But, you know, and let him do that until he's 12 or 13 years of age. Then we'll talk about whether he needs to learn how to read. And whenever people hear that, they get really shocked. And I say, I know you're thinking, you know, what's the state going to say? I said, forget the state. What matters is your love for that son or that daughter. And God has created that daughter unique. And you have liberty in Christ to modify, to direct that education in the best way that you can. Remember, it's not a paint by numbers. It's a sculpture. And sculpturing has no recipe for it. You can't follow any guide. It's very unique.
It's vitally important for these kids to grow up with self-worth that comes from God.
Right, right.
And if we're not careful, we destroy it. And right. I've seen it happen over and over because I tend to be somewhat around other LD kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen them turn on God, turn on Christianity
because
they have no self-worth anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say keep your son's self-worth or your daughter's self-worth up high. Don't worry as much about the reading.
They need to understand that they were created in the image of God, and God
Absolutely.
Has given them value.
Absolutely.
God has given them value. And it's for parents to recognize that value and affirm and thank the Lord and say, you have this gift, honey. It's a beautiful gift. It's a gift that nobody else has in this family, and we so appreciate this gift. And not just sit there and focus, but you can't read. But you can't do that when your math is really stinks and you got a 27th percentile on the national standardized test. What's wrong with you?
27? No, my son got 16.
Try 16. Okay.
Actually, this is Luke, who's not very dyslexic.
Mm-hmm.
He's mild because he just can't spell.
Yeah.
But he was 13% in spelling.
Wow.
Everything else was in the 90s with him.
Everything else was in the 90s.
Yes, that's why they looked at him and said this. He's disabled.
Amazing.
But 90s in spelling. He does function well now, but he really struggled.
Yeah.
You know, it's just.
So you got a very uniquely gifted young man there. And, man, we got to learn to affirm that and maximize on those talents and abilities. I mean, you know, on the one hand, maybe we shouldn't be focusing on something that's not working. On the other hand, maybe we should be maximizing on those gifts that God has given to them. And you say your sons are very artistic. And to be artistic is not always appreciated as much in our society as it should be. But evidently God appreciates it because he gave them the gift. I think a lot of parents who have been in this academic mold aren't thinking, you know, maybe we shouldn't do any of this. I was counseling a family whose son was 17 or 18. Younger sons were doing well in math and everything else. But this son just wasn't doing well in this kind of thing. I said, you know, I told him, you know, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. You just set all those expectations aside and you say, what has God given my son? And for the last year or two, just make up your own curriculum. If you want to do 17 art courses, do 17 art courses. If you want to just send them out to work on a farm, call it Agriculture 101 for the year and just use that. Is this legal? You're like a director for Christian Home Education of Colorado, and you're telling me that I have the liberty in Christ to maximize on my sins. See, some of the other children in the home were doing just fine, and they're frustrated. And this young man doesn't like school at all.
If I had let Paul take art all the way through high school,
mm-hmm.
I would have had a young man who was pretty confident right now.
Yeah.
But I had to teach reading.
Yeah.
Now, I do think you should keep remedial reading going. But somewhere around seventh grade,
yeah.
You need to look at it and say,
that's 20 minutes a day. That's 10 minutes a day.
This is not the main part
that's
of my day anymore.
That's not the focus yet. That's right.
You know,
that's right.
This may not go. And I think part of it is we are reluctant to accept that in God's plans, they may not read ever.
Mm-hmm.
At least I was.
Yeah. And so we just need to put that to rest and say, that's the way it's going to be. And let's move on to the other abilities that God has blessed this young man with. And that was the counsel I was trying to give this family. And they were pulling their hair out because their other children were doing just fine. Now, what's wrong with him? You know, that was the question. Doesn't that happen so much?
It does. It does. And I will tell you right now on air that if anybody wants to contact me by email that is frustrated, feel free.
Okay.
This is a ministry God has given me
Good.
After 30 years of teaching to encourage these young moms that are just...
Mm-hmm.
They need someone to talk to.
Absolutely. You've been there, done that, got 18 T-shirts with this over a number of years with multiple sons with learning disabilities.
I'm still in it because if you have an LD child,
mm-hmm.
learning disabled child, you're going to go all the way through college with them.
Wonderful.
You don't end at high school.
That's a good thing.
You go all the way through.
I'm so glad.
If they do college. Or
yeah.
you go through their entrepreneurship.
Right. And
their
mentorship.
You still go on with them until they're 22, 23.
Very good. I like that. So be it. And, you know, we're doing our best to lock these children that God has given us. And you've learned so many lessons over the years. Your wisdom is very important, Kristen. I want to encourage you in what you're doing to share with others concerning this. I know you've done just a little bit. You've done an interview down in Colorado Springs at Pikes Peak, and you've done an interview with me. I just want to encourage you, continue to do this. And if folks want to contact you, what is your email?
Nabetta. N-A-B as in boy, E-T-A, mom, at gmail.com.
Nabetta, mom, at gmail.com. That's Nabetta, N-A-B-E-T-A, mom, at gmail.com to get in touch with Kristen Nabetta, who has been there. And she has worked for 29 years in the homeschooling environment with some very special needs, some very unique situations.
I won't answer immediately, but I will answer because I'm still, I've still got a, the 16-year-old does not have any problems.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, but I still have a 17 and a 20-year-old that I'm working with.
Okay.
So.
All right. Well, congratulations, Kristen. God has been with you. And I think the message today, friends, is let's do all this by faith and let's appreciate what God has given. And let's take the wisdom of those who have gone before us. And I want to encourage any of you who are really struggling in the homeschooling environment or even a private public school environment with special needs kids. And Kristen, I think we can say that the homeschool environment can be very, very good for these kids. It can be, but not in every case. It just depends on whether we're applying the wisdom and we're moving ahead in faith.
I don't know if I can add this real quick or not, but I did take Luke to a specialist, mm-hmm. reading specialist at UCCS in the fourth grade. And he didn't have a lot of problems, just really the spelling. And she looked at me and she said, honey, I don't even believe in homeschooling, but don't put this kid back in public school.
Mm-hmm.
She said he'd be in remedial math, remedial history, remedial anything they could throw him in because he doesn't read well enough.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, and it ruins their self-esteem.
Okay, my friends. Again, if you'd like to contact Kristen Nabetta, it's nabettamom@gmail.com. And you have been listening to the Generations Radio broadcast on a very special conversation concerning special needs children. Now, we're never going to answer all of the questions in one 30-minute program. It's impossible.
But hopefully this is the beginning of an important conversation for some of the families that are listening to the program. Again, if you'd like to contact Kristen Nevada, it's NevadaMom@gmail.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.